Hello and welcome to Ace Your Space, Declutter Your Life, Free Your Time, Reclaim Your Energy. I'm Leanne Pruitt, your host, and I am so excited that you're here with us today. I tell you, we've got such a treat for us. I am so excited that Jess Davis is here with us. Hello, Jess. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, how you doing?
I am doing really great. Now, I got to introduce you guys to Jess. She's so cool. You're going to love her. So Jess is a digital well-being thought leader, editor-in-chief of Folk Rebellion, and renowned creative strategist. She was recognized as a limit-breaking founder by Arianna Huffington. This modern-day pseudo-philosopher may not have all the answers, but she's got the much-needed questions. Jess's company, Folk Rebellion, was named the 2018 Wellness Trend of the Year by Well and Good, and Jess's work as a creative brand strategist earned her a coveted 40 Under 40 award, and her writings on technology, digital detox, which we all could use a little more of in this day and age, entrepreneurship, and parenting in the modern world have been featured in Inc., Thrive Global, The Guardian, and tons of other places. Innately curious, Jess lives a rebellious life that is inspiring a counterculture movement, encouraging a plugged-in world to raise hell and live well. And I got to tell you, Jess, with that hat, I know that you raise hell and live well. That's all I got to say. So
it's my superhero cape.
I love it. So you know what, Jess, I am so excited to have you here. Now, I know you started out in marketing and branding and sort of realized that what you were putting out to, like, I guess, like, pull people in together was actually just sort of like separating us. We were kind of looking more at our phones than at each other. And so you made a big shift and started Folk Rebellion, I believe. So tell me a little bit more about your story and how all of this came about.
Yeah. So I've been in marketing and brand strategy for over 15 years here in the city, and I was at the point in time where the internet was really starting to be used as a tool in, you know, organizations, businesses. So long ago that my first class I ever taught at a college was Viral Marketing 101. And it was for small businesses to kind of understand, like, how to start a Facebook page. And so it was a really long time ago in this short amount of time that is, you know, the technological sort of tidal wave we've experienced here. And so my career went on to sit at the crossroads with the people who were sitting in the C-suite and were the decision makers, who didn't really understand these new technologies and communities or why they were important. I, having been a storyteller, a writer, artist, it was very easy for me to kind of dive into this world quite accidentally and succeed there. And so I had a lot of clients that I was operating basically all of their digital communications, e-commerce, websites, anything in between, anything that fell under the tech umbrella came to me. And when you have 15 clients and you're operating 5 to 10 platforms for each of them, you start to feel really, really unwell. And I very quickly started to realize that what I was doing, yes, I was able to get attention and get followers and get engagement, but the amount of time and the deep connection that we were seeking with our customers or our clients was getting more fragmented and more fragmented and more fragmented. And that's exactly how my brain felt. And so I couldn't figure out what was wrong with my brain, but towards the end of my work in, you know, corporate America with all of these clients, I started to see different neurologists to find out what was wrong with this feeling of memory loss and disassociation, a general feeling of malaise. I used to joke that I couldn't have told you what I had for breakfast because I couldn't remember. My brains were scrambled eggs. Right. And the long and the short of it is I ended up leaving it all because I went on a vacation with my family. And when I landed at the airport, they demanded I turn over my laptop, my cell phone, my Kindle, my everything. And it was essentially an intervention. Mm-hmm. And it was there that I had had the deepest connection that I had had with people in probably over a decade. And my brain turned back on in a way that it hadn't been operating. And so that's kind of how I started Folk Rebellion, because it was out of my own personal need for my own health, wellness, and connection with my family.
So I'm curious, when you were going to these doctors and saying something's wrong, I've got this brain fog, I can't even remember what I have for breakfast, were they finding anything or what were they telling you to do?
So that it's actually an interesting question no one's ever asked before. They could not find anything. They said that everything by the book was exactly how it should be. So then they did all of the sort of cliched things, which is, well, maybe you're nutrient deficient. Maybe you're not getting enough sun. Maybe you're not getting enough exercise. Oh, it's baby brain. But my son was, you know, 3 years old at the time. So, but anything that they asked me to do or said it might be, I was an A++ student. I was like, okay, gluten intolerance, like no more pizza. If I need more vegetables, I will, like anything that they asked, I did, and nothing fixed it. Not a single thing. And it even got to the point where I started to seek advice outside of traditional medicine, because I was like, there's something wrong here. I'm like, is it, you know, Eastern medicine, Western medicine? Is it, I even went and saw like an energy doctor, and I might look woo woo with this hat, but I'm really not. And so the fact that I was like, can you please come and fix whatever's happening with my brain? But it wasn't until I went without technology for 8 days in a row, accidentally, not by choice, that it was like someone flipped my switch back on my brain. And I knew I never wanted to feel that way again.
That, you know, that is really something. And I'm almost thinking it's like when you were getting these diagnoses of nothing's wrong from these doctors, that's probably how so many of us go through life, being told there's nothing wrong. So we just kind of adopt that and think, well, I guess this is just how it's supposed to be.
For sure. And if you notice like the increase in conversations, specifically, I find it around women, successful women, people that are doing a lot in their lives. They talk a lot about these unknowns of like potentially like autoimmune or chronic fatigue or things like that. And I believe that it all kind of stems back, or a lot of it stems back to the stress hormones and this sort of like instant always being on, creating this inflammation in our body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really great point. So the title of this show is Ace Your Space, Declutter Your Life, Free Your Time, Reclaim Your Energy. And I'm curious, what does Ace Your Space, or the title of this show, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, so space is a word that I use a lot when I give my talks and workshops. For me, I talk about reclaiming your space. So it's very similar to what it is you're doing. And I think of space almost as an area to be protected in my life, whether it is in my actual home, in the four walls, or if it's space in my brain, which actually is the one that I seem I have to protect the most nowadays, space in the sort of communications and things that you allow coming in. And so I think that if you don't stake your claim and put the boundaries and the barriers around your space, you're never really living the life that you want to. You're living one that other people want you to, whether it's because of capitalism or, you know, content that you're being forced to consume 24/7.
I love that. That is such a great answer. Now, you know, I wanted to have you on this series because, you know, clutter is not just physical. A lot of people, when they first hear clutter and decluttering, they think of that pile over in the corner. It is not just physical. It's everything. It's digital. It's spiritual. It can come in the form, you know, it's really anything that gets in the way of you and what you want to do in your life. And, you know, one thing that we clearly need to declutter is like our digital selves, you know, and like, what do you think has gone wrong with how we relate to the digital world, and what really needs to change?
Yeah. So I think everything really drastically changed with the creation of the iPad and the iPhone. The world essentially went into our pocket and with us everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then with the creation of that, this device cannibalized all these other forms of medium in our lives. So for example, your cell phone is not a phone anymore. It is your calendar. It is your camera. It is your calculator. It is your grocery list. It's everything, right? And so the more, it's your watch. And so the
it's the clock timing this interview right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's everything. And the more power we gave it, the more it moved into our space, right? And it took things out of our space. So for me, I think that the most important thing we can do is kind of take our power back from these sort of technologies and push back and create the boundaries and the balance needed around them, because the big problem with them is they are in our lives 24/7 with us, on us, someday, soon, if not already, in us. And if we don't start to decide how we want these technologies to work for us as tools, not replacements, it's just going to continually consume everything. And the thing it loves to consume the most is our attention and our time mm-hmm. and data.
Mm-hmm. There's like so much to say there, but I'm going to actually go on and ask you the next question because I'll have more to say after that. Like, now when people decide, when they say, all right, it's just too much. I'm on this phone. I'll see where people say, oh, I'm taking a break from Instagram or whatever. So when people decide they want to kind of declutter this digital world of theirs, what kind of pitfalls do they run into? What mistakes do they make?
Yeah, a lot of people do an all or nothing, right? It, unfortunately, the tools are so powerful and the algorithms and the platforms that keep pulling you in, people can't push back on it. That even engaging with it a little bit, saying, okay, I'm only going to check it, you know, in the morning or once at night before I go to bed, it pulls them back in so quickly. And so I understand the desire to completely go off of everything or you know, do a digital detox for, you know, 30 days or 3 days, mm-hmm. but it's not sustainable. And I have tried to go off the grid completely so many times, and it does pull you back in. And I actually think the better way to think of it is to live well alongside the technology and with it. And so the biggest pitfall is, you know, all or nothing. The second pitfall would be, getting overwhelmed at trying to make changes and quitting, because you're going to make a bunch of mistakes. You know, one of the easiest changes I say is starting to operate your inbox or whatever form of communication you have that seems to be eroding like the most of your space or time, and setting times for when you're actually going to check it and batch that. And, you know, what works for me isn't going to work for you, isn't going to work for somebody else who's watching this. It all depends on your lifestyle and your work and things like that. But when you first take a whack at it and you're like, okay, I'm going to try and only check email, let's say it's email, 5 times a day. Yep. If it doesn't work, because it's probably not going to work right away, don't just quit. You know, don't make that the pitfall. Like, it took me, I'd say, 9 months to figure out what my proper workflow is best for my life and my work and my creativity, but also what the people on the other end were willing to tolerate, and then communicating that to them. And that would be the third pitfall, is when you go to make these sort of changes in your life, unfortunately we live in the type of world where people expect you to be accessible. And if you do go missing off of email, some people, if you don't hear back from them in an hour, they think you're dead. So it's a matter of communicating that you're going to be making these changes in your lives, and that you're testing them, and you're going to be shifting them, and really kind of shouting it from the rooftops, because you'll feel anxious that your boss can't find you, or your husband doesn't know that you've set your phone aside for 3 hours to be present with your kids. So there's a lot of expectation management that needs to happen when you do this.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I know that, and I do this all the time. I have an aunt that lives in Atlanta, and she's 95. She'll be 96, actually in a week. And, she's actually pretty savvy digitally for a 95 or 96 year old. But I know, like, if I don't get her when I expect to get her, I'm like thinking, oh, what's happened to her and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, she's just off doing something, you know, It's like, get over it. You know, she's fine. She'll answer her phone when she's ready to. So funny. So now, what steps would you mentioned like take the time to figure out what works for you, but what steps would you give people like when they want to start taking some more control around their digital lives? Is it do you always start with email or do you start different places?
No, everyone has their own gateway drug. That's what I say. What is a problem for me is potentially not a problem for my sister or my boyfriend. So the only way to really understand what your gateway drug is to do a digital detox. And I don't want that to sound counterintuitive to what I just said. I don't think a digital detox is the way to live your life. I think it is a great experiment to understand really what you're dealing with. So you can't know what your triggers fully are or how often you're going into them or your bad habits without taking a real big look in the mirror. And so I always encourage people to try and do at least a weekend digital detox. If you can do a week, I mean, right now we're in a weird time warp, so maybe people have the ability to take 7 days, but even 24 hours works. And you put your phone, put all your devices away. And when I say detox, I don't just mean your phone. I mean any and all technology. Some people get crazy and they're like, what about my smart microwave? I'm like, I'm not talking about that. I'm really just
you can pop some popcorn.
Exactly. And set it away. And then what I always tell people is you don't want to create a vacuum where something once was. You're going to miss it a lot already, but if there's nothing there in its place, it's like a constant reminder. So you always want to replace it with something. So I put notebooks. I make these notebooks and they're the size of a cell phone. And you slide it in your back pocket if that's where you usually keep your cell phone. If it's in your purse, put it in there. And every time you go to reach for your cell phone or you go to touch it, take it out and write down one, a hatch for how many times you tried to touch your phone or you felt a vibration, but also write a note to yourself. Like, what were you doing in that moment? What were you thinking about? Was it that you needed to shop on Amazon because you had to get your son's soccer shoes before or whatever? Was it that you were just bored in line? Is it for me? The reason I tell everyone to do this is I found one of my most appalling qualities about myself in a digital detox. I'll tell you, it's embarrassing because it really helps people. I did go away for a weekend to this like adult summer camp years ago, and they made you check your phones in. And I kept reaching for my back pocket. And I, at the end, realized that every time I reached for my back pocket, it was that I was trying to exit a conversation of somebody I just met. So I cannot stand small talk. It makes me insane. I'm an introvert at heart. I have a really hard time with it. And so anytime I was just introduced with someone and they're like, you know, so what do you do? Where are you from? It was like, whoop. And I was trying to find a way to exit the conversation. Mm-hmm. And how gross is that? Because if you go through life, like not actually connecting with anyone past the surface level, you know, what does your life look like? And the big spoiler is that I ended up becoming very, very good friends with this person. Mm-hmm. Had I had my phone in my back pocket, I think that might not have happened. So yeah. It's like things like that. So that is really like when people want to start on this road, like get the self-awareness. First part is do the experiment yourself. If you can do it with your family, an office, like I've had a doctor's office say they no longer connect with their customers anymore because they have screens all over the place. And so I help them do one with all the, you know, all the nurses and the girls at the front desk. And it changed everything. So that's the first step. The second one is I interview the people around me about my usage, and that part sucks. But to look at your son or look at your creative, you know, cohort or, and just ask them, just be like, how do you feel? When do you think I touch it? Like when are you feeling ignored? Like just get those conversations and it gives you a little, I'm assuming usually the feedback that people get is it gives them the desire to then change.
Mm-hmm. Got it. I love that. That's a great tip. It's a great place to start. And then you really see you know, what your habits are and what you're digging into, where you can put time limits on it. I'm thinking about myself. I have this stupid game on my iPad, and I've gotten to where it's like, I allow myself to play it because I've tried deleting it and then I end up like installing it back. But I say, all right, I set the timer. I say, all right, 15 minutes. When it rains, I turn it off. And that makes it more manageable.
Right. And those things are okay, right? It's just a matter of whatever it is you're using, what is it cannibalizing? What is it taking away? What is it adding? And if you start to look at every single app, every single platform, every single new innovation, you're like, is this adding value? Is this taking away? If you were a scrapbooker for your whole life and, you know, worked very much in the analog world, and then you've been on Pinterest for the past decade, which is great. And I use Pinterest a lot for work and whatnot. But if it doesn't create the same joy that the scrapbooking did, then maybe it's time for you to fall back in love with the tactile and the tangible. And that's just one way to pull space away from the screen and bring you back into the real world, where biologically your body needs those sort of connections to things like paper and people and, you know, real things.
Well, you know, and interestingly, you know, you mentioned biologically, I heard of the, I don't remember the figure the other day, but it was like how many more inputs we get now than people did like even 50 or 100 years ago, like where we're trying to shuffle it. And it's all coming from this electronic stuff that just like.
Yeah, we're in a tsunami of constant stimulation and data and information. And so not to terrify you, but the biological response that we have to a ding, a ping, a notification, an alert is the same exact biological response that our caveman ancestors had when a lion was charging at them. So when you think of it that way, right, and you're like, okay, maybe a lion, I'll give you once a week. A lion charged at you once a week. You were stressed out like that once a week. By 10 a.m., how many times has a lion charged at you?
I know. Right? Think of all that cortisol and stuff in the system. Oh, Lord. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's scary. I remember that. Like, no pings, no notifications. Yeah. Now, you know what? When people actually are able to kind of get this digital life balance right, what's available to them?
Oh, so much more. First and foremost, it's connection. Mm-hmm. Connection to themselves again. They're not living on autopilot. They're not in the fog of, you know, that feeling of when you drive from point A to point B and you don't remember how you got there. Mm-hmm. That's how people like go days, potentially weeks now, because it is very much this sort of trance-like state that we get in. So reconnection to yourself, connection to those around you, true connection, you know, not a group chat filled with memes and emojis and LOLs, because I know that that does not feel nearly as good as talking on the phone with my best friend or even FaceTiming with my mother. And obviously once we can go back in real life, you know, connection to people, touching them, being with them. And then connection to the world around you in nature. And so being pulled into these sort of 2D screens and virtual worlds is taking us really kind of removed, where you can have these whole lives on Instagram or Twitter, but you will not have, you know, walked barefoot in a park. And we know how good one is for you and the other one is not so good for you when you're spending your time. And it talked about 15 minutes, right? So my son will say to me, "Ugh, 15 minutes of gardening. It's the longest thing in the whole world." 15 minutes to him feels like 5 years, because it's something that is very physical and hot and he doesn't want to do it. But 15 minutes on his little old school Nintendo I let him play goes by in a second. So when people say they don't have time to write a letter, they don't have time to call someone, or they don't have time to work out, you start to add up those minutes of where they're going. And it's just not the best for people. You know, people are so hungry to feel connected, content, and happy. And if you do have a nice balance with your technology, you will start to feel those things again. Mm-hmm. Less frazzled, less frenetic energy.
I love that. That's beautiful. Okay, I got a couple more questions for you. When was the last time you did something for the first time?
So it's kind of disappointing. I'm disappointed in myself because I love to do new things, but I'm realizing I haven't really stepped out of my comfort zone in a while. So I would have to say I ate a snail last summer, but that's okay. Way too far like back. I need to like start shaking things up here.
All right. Now then, you're about to fight in a boxing title match. You're entering the ring. What song is playing?
Ace Frehley, Back in the New York Groove.
Okay, I love that. That's great.
That's my pump up song for anything.
That's good. I got to listen to that one. I got to add that to my playlist. Okay, I think you have a gift for the audience.
Oh, yes, I do. I had just told you about my marketing life and branding career, and it's something that regularly pulls me back in. I worked with clients on the side forever, and this past year, to reclaim my space, I wanted to focus on writing a book and no longer take clients. So I decided to build out a masterclass of basically everything I've ever learned that I used to charge a lot of money for with my clients privately, that I wanted to release into the world so I could no longer take any clients. So it's a masterclass on marketing, branding, and entrepreneurship. It's self-driven, and there's four modules. And so the first module, which is the largest one, is the one that I'm gonna gift to all of the people here today.
You know, I think they're really gonna enjoy that. But first of all, I know that there's a lot of people that follow me that kind of, they say, you know, we would love to, you know, that's one of the things I ask them, when this clutter is out of your way, what's on the other side of this clutter for you? What do you want to do? And they're like, oh, we'd love to start a business or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that it's like, you know, marketing and branding can help all of us to figure out how we're, what we're showing to the world. So I think I love that. I think people are going to love that. Now I have one last question for you. If you could leave people with one actionable thing that they can do to declutter their life, what would it be?
Return to the 3D world as much as possible. So I know that seems counterintuitive to decluttering. I'm saying when it's in replacement of technology. So you're trying to declutter your space digitally and get off your screens as much as possible. I want you to return to the 3D in ways where it really connects with you. So some things would be music, photography, actually, you know, having an actual camera or printing out photos and putting them in an album, making things off of screens. I make things on screens all the time, but there is nothing like sitting at my kitchen table and cutting things out and ripping them up and things like that. If you're on a computer or a device all day long for work, return to an actual physical book and feel the pages turn. It will just feel like a relaxation to be in a different format. So probably a little counterintuitive to some of the decluttering, but if you pick and choose the certain things that were really special to you before technology kind of took over everything that we loved, you know, find that one hobby or one thing where the real world can return.
I love that. That's a great idea. Thanks, Jess. You know what? I have so enjoyed talking with you today. This has been so fun. And I know that the audience is going to get so much out of this interview. So thank you so much for being here.
No, I really appreciate it. It's really interesting to see what you guys are doing. And I hope that, you know, this helps just one person figure out how to create space in their lives so they have more connection.
Exactly. I think it's going to help more than one person, actually. I think it's going to help a lot of people. You know what, audience? Thank you so much for being here. You're the reason why we're doing all of this. So I really thank you for being here and listening to us today. Be sure and check your email, not too often, but at least check it in the morning to see what our next great Ace Your Space interviews are. We've got a couple more good ones for you coming up tomorrow. Until then, I'll see you later. Bye-bye.